Hey, Wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 416 of the JV Club. I don't know why I'm already laughing. I think it's because I'm thinking about my delightful, delightful guest, Karen Lucas. She created the show Country Comfort that I had the great, great pleasure of being on this last year. And the show is very family friendly, very sweet, lots of music, some adorable and wonderful performances by my co-stars. And I was so, so delighted to have Karen on the show. I just think the world of her. She creates an amazing environment in which to work. We talked about a little bit on the episode with Julia Fowler, one of the writers on Country Comfort, if you listen to that. But she's also just kind of a powerhouse in her own right, above and beyond Country Comfort. She is an amazing writer, and it was so cool to kind of hear about her experience as one of the, I mean, listen, female writers on comedy and TV shows, that's still something that we struggle with today in the business. So getting to talk to someone who's been doing it for a little while was very, very cool. I think you'll find it very interesting and fun. And also, I mean, working on a game show? Come on. Anyway, as you probably know, if you've listened to past episodes the last couple of weeks, we are gearing up for Max Fun Drive. We really, really, really do love celebrating you, the listener, the supporter of this listener-supported network. So we want your stories, friends. You can email why you love the JV Club or why you even like the JV Club at memberstories. My voice got really high there. memberstories@maximumfun.org. Or you can call and leave a voicemail. What? 323-601-8719. And just say a few words. You can even say a haiku about the JV Club. We'll be delighted to play it on the show. So enjoy the episode. I hope you are well. I am feeling good about the way we're all headed. And I send much love. Here we are, just two Southern women talking about Country Comfort. I had Julia on. She represented for all of us.
She is definitely Southern and definitely charming. She has all the Southern things going for her.
She does.
I love Julia.
I didn't know that you guys knew each other before. I mean, why would I? But I didn't know that you had worked together on something and that you brought her in. And that you had already done a really cool project together. That was really fun to hear about and find out about.
I was just thinking that this is how my mind works. I was just thinking when you ask, anytime you ask me something, I'm going to go, uh-huh. And then that's all I'm going to say. I'm going to like say yes and no.
Uncomfortable silence. And then I'll start filling it with just whatever. Like, you know what's funny about radishes? They're so pink. They're pink. But on the inside, white.
I love to hear you do that. Okay, so yes, Julie and I met while doing another show. My manager put us together because she was married to a Jewish guy and she was not Jewish. She was Southern. So I don't know if she told you all this, their story. Oh, well then I'm not going to tell you. Yeah. Now, their story was great.
And isn't it a great story? Yeah. And you can just go.
Yes. We reversed it. We made the girl the Jewish girl since I was writing it because it was easier for me to do that. So we reversed it. We made him Southern and her the Jewish girl. And, so that's what we did on that.
And as a Jewish gal, where were you? Where'd you grow up? Where'd you spend your teen years?
In the South. No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
I was born in Chicago, and I grew up here in LA. Though I left Chicago when I was around 5.
Oh, okay.
And then my parents decided to come with me.
They woke up in the middle of the night realizing, why did we let our 5-year-old move to Los Angeles alone? That does not seem wise in retrospect.
I knew I had to be here. No. So we picked up and moved to Beverly. No, we moved to the Valley. And I grew up pretty much in the Valley. And then we moved to Encino, of course. And then,
of course, as you do.
As right near Gelson's, as every good Jewish girl does. And I grew up in the Valley. It was great. I grew up so pretty much in LA. So born in Chicago, pretty much in LA.
What do you have brothers and sisters?
I have an older brother, an older sister. I like to say older because at this age, I love being the youngest of something.
100%.
My brother's musician. He's also a creator. He created this new guitar that's amazing.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Amp. It doesn't need an amp. It's an electric guitar that doesn't need an amp. It's amazing.
Oh, boy.
And my sister has, the most amazing children. She has three girls, and they have babies, and the triplets are in the family. So I have, like, combo of 11 nieces and nephews.
Ay. And
yeah,
and what
awesome.
What brought your family out to Chicago, from Chicago to L.A. and Gelson's?
I think they heard
it was Gelson's.
My dad was trying different things. My dad had a new business he wanted to start up in L.A. So we came, you know, for his business. And then he started here and we never left.
Yeah.
And it's great here.
Did you go to private school? Did you go to public school?
No, I'm public. I'm
yeah,
all
me
about
too.
Public.
Me too.
Yeah. I went in Sherman Oaks, and then I went to high school, and I went to Birmingham High, and that's what I did here. I was involved in singing and all that stuff, all the stuff I'm sure you were involved in.
Well, I'm from Arizona, and I'm always fascinated by people who grew up in areas like New York or Los Angeles, or Chicago, where you sort of have, if you're an artistic person, you have things kind of around you that feel real, that feel doable, possible. You know, I'm coming from a place where I didn't know. I mean, I think I knew a kid. I knew one kid who was on a Nickelodeon show called Hey Dude, because it shot at Old Tucson. And that was like, and I think I even thought like, well, I guess he's made it, so he'll be the kid from Tucson who makes it. Like, there just wasn't, I didn't have that relationship with show business the way it seems that kids who kind of grew up with it closer by. But by the same token, it could feel like, oh, you know, it's all around me, but I'm not really a part of it. So did you feel that feeling of like possibility and sort of like a career stretching forward?
I don't know when I got the idea that I wanted to be in show business. I don't know if I would have had it in Chicago. I don't know, but I love singing with a passion. So at a very young age, my dad was very into music, loved the old, Ella Fitzgerald and, like Stephen Eady and all Sarah Vaughan, all the olds. But I loved Judy Garland from the time, I don't even remember how old I was, but I saw something of Judy Garland and I said, oh, I want to be her. That's what I want.
Yeah.
I loved this. Something I connected with Judy Garland. I don't know.
Do you think it was The Wizard of Oz or was it? I
no,
mean, I don't mean that as like
no,
all
it was
the whole,
Garland.
Yeah, okay.
It was old when she started having problems, and she was like, I felt sad for her, and I connected to her in some odd way. I don't know, and her voice, amazing voice, like crying in her voice.
Yeah.
So I grew up listening to Judy Garland in my room, closed the door. Back then they had albums, and I listened to Judy at Carnegie Hall like every day. I came home from school and sang, and thought I was going to be the next big giant singer. But then all the singers I liked, I realized had a little tragedy. And so I thought, I don't know if I have enough tragedy to be good or the voice. The voice helps too. But, then I had Barbara Streisand and I'm like, oh no, I maybe should be a writer. I shouldn't be a singer.
That was it.
They were so brilliant. They were all so good. So I was like, I was more of a funny singer. I would do comedy with my singing and impressions and things like that.
I can relate to that. Yeah.
I sang, and that's what I wanted to do. And it wasn't until very late that I became a writer. I was in game shows and all other kinds of things before being a writer.
Wait a minute. You were on game shows as a singer?
I went to do game shows when I was trying to be a singer. Let me know if I get boring because I could talk about myself all day.
I want you to all day.
Okay. So I wanted to be a singer. So I recorded a song at some guy's studio and I thought, oh my God, this is it. I've made it. And I didn't. But at that place.
Wait, did they
ask?
No, see, now I got to slow you down. This is how unboring you are. I need to know, what do you mean you recorded? Like, did you say I have a song of my own that I want to go and record?
Remember the song? Do you remember the song? I will follow him.
Yeah.
Follow him wherever. Okay. They had like a kind of a disco kind of fun version of it. And I recorded it. And I thought, oh, this is going to be huge.
Okay, so wait, did you audition for it? Did you have the idea? Like, how did that come to be?
I don't even remember. I think it was, I honestly, I don't remember.
Did you wake up from being blacked out inside the studio and not know how you got there? Because this is starting to feel like enough tragedy for you to be a singer if you're being kidnapped.
Maybe you're right. Maybe I just don't remember. And we can still have a singing career.
It can happen.
I think I was auditioning for a lot of things and they must have seen me. And I don't remember because back then I was auditioning and things like that.
This song better be readily available.
By the way, I honestly don't remember a lot of things. Like, I won't remember what we just talked about in about an hour and a half.
Okay, great.
Anyway, at the building I was in, upstairs was a game show company. And I was also trying to be a singer. And my father, bless his heart, one day said to me, you know, you can't sit around and just try to be a singer all the time. You're going to have to do something with your life.
Like a more adult occupation, like game shows.
Like do something, yes.
like accounting, lawyer, doctor, game show contestant.
Exactly. So in that building, I just went up to get a job, just to get a job in the game show company. And I did. And I just got a job to hold me while I was trying to be a singer.
Okay, so you worked sort of as a production assistant or as a writer?
Yeah, I worked as a receptionist. I started as a receptionist. And then I guess I was so vivacious.
I have to say that doesn't surprise me at all. The idea of you working as a receptionist at a game show company feels so right. I could never have guessed. You'd never guess it. And then you hear it and you're like, yeah, that tracks.
Yeah, I quickly got a job on Family Feud back then, which was the biggest game show around. And then I got a job as a contestant coordinator on it. So I was always interviewing the families, and which was really fun.
Oh, yeah.
So I would interview all their personalities. What you're doing with me right now, I did with all the family members. Then I'd play the game with them. And then we traveled. That's how I got to see so much of the United States. I mean, we went everywhere. And that's when I fell in love with the South. The South. Oh, I love the people in the South. The families were so great in the South.
And that's really it. That's the sort of straight line you can draw to, like, you hadn't really had an experience in the South, but went in that capacity. And it just dropped you right into the sort of authenticity of the culture of the South and the families and the food. And that, I mean, that's really amazing, right?
I think I never thought about it, you know, but I think it had a really big impact on me because I love the people so much. I love the food.
Yeah.
I love the music. And then I went to New Orleans and I was like, oh, yeah. The music and going into those places and just listening to music and the people, all those families were the best. They were those Southern families. They were fantastic.
And did they tend to win when they competed on Family Feud, or were they wonderful and charming, but not necessarily the bloodthirsty, like intensely competitive winners that some families are on Family Feud?
That's a big question, but I think it's both. I think some of them were like that. Yeah. And some were, they're so charming and they were so great.
And
I love this.
And did you, I mean, obviously in that experience, you are sort of like getting, I was going to say getting people all over you, but that sounds extremely creepy. But you really were sort of, I mean, I love doing that stuff too. When I lived in San Francisco, there was this like weird sliver of time when, and I've talked about this on the podcast a tiny bit, but in San Francisco in the early aughts, and maybe this is still true, but I kind of doubt it. There are so many big companies based in the Bay Area, but it's not like showbiz town like that's down south. And so these companies would get away with hiring, particularly for photographers, for commercial photographers, if they were doing print ads or cereal boxes, like Kashi Cereal was based in San Francisco. They would just scout people on the street. And say, you know, they would hire casting people to just walk up to people and go, hey, you're an attractive businessman in his 50s with salt and pepper hair. We're actually looking for someone like you for this Apple ad that we're casting. And because it's not somebody who's represented, you know, you offer them $1,000 to use their picture forever in something and they're flattered and they love it. And that's how you sort of do something very cheaply with just sort of real people talent is what they called it. And that kept happening to me on the talent side. Someone would go, hey, you girl working in this store, we are looking for someone like you to hug a puppy for the ASPCA or whatever. And I'm such a people person that I ended up becoming friends with some of those photographers who kept calling me for stuff. And so I ended up working as a coordinator, very much like what you were doing, but on this real people casting side where I had a lovely time. Like they would say, you need to be out at Fisherman's Wharf at 5 a.m. because we want real, you know, crab fishermen for this whatever, like Fisherman's Friend cough drops that we're doing this print ad for that'll be in,
that's
you know,
funny.
Home and Garden magazines. And so it would send me to all of these places, I mean, again, this is just in the Bay Area, but just those sort of specific vocations, like there, I remember there was one where they were like, we're thinking we want someone very earthy. You know, we'd love someone who's like mixed race, somebody who's into the arts. So where would you go? And so you go and you just like try to meet all of these potters and these women painters, and you kind of figure out where they all are and where those communities are. I loved it because I was being dropped into someone else's world and someone else's enthusiasm or someone else's family. And it felt like I was getting, I just was, I was like in love with those people for the day, you know?
It's great. And then, you know, once they were on the show, we couldn't do it before, but we went back, we got to go to their houses and have dinner, and you just get to see how everybody lives in different places. And it's really awesome. That's also when I went to the Loveless Motel. They have a Loveless Motel there, and it's called the Loveless Motel. I just thought it was the greatest name I've ever heard. And all the food there is so good. They have the Loveless Motel. They have the jams and the jellies. Just everything I ate was great. Oh, and, you know, Popeye Chicken, my dad opened the first Popeye Chicken in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
Because when I was traveling way back then, they were thinking of franchising it actually in Tucson, in Arizona.
Oh, wow.
They were going to open the first one. So he had me, when I was in the South, he had me go taste some of the, you know, the Popeye chicken and the biscuits and everything to see if it was something he should do.
Yeah.
And of course, I fell in love with it. Oh. Popeye chicken is the best. The biscuits are amazing. And he was going to open the first one in Arizona. Then the LA one became available. So he opened one in here.
And I was going to say, I did not grow up with easy access that I can remember to Popeye's chicken. That was definitely something that I don't know. Your dad may have deprived me, because
maybe
I had very few options. We had to go to the Lucky Wishbone, which was like chicken fingers and fish fingers and everything all kind of tasted like chicken and fish together, because it was all just weird blocks.
Do you eat meat?
I do.
You seem like the type who would not eat meat.
No, that's because I was just talking about Kashi cereal, but no, I don't. No, I eat meat. I'm not a vegetarian.
Only because you look so healthy and you look so, you know, trim and healthy. And usually
I'm looking,
you know, when I see that,
I'm looking in a mirror, except for we have different colored hair.
You can only see my face.
You don't, I don't know what you, I mean, you don't look like someone who's like, all I eat is fritters all day, and you just have grease all over your fingers as you're waving to me on Zoom.
Well, today I'm with you, so I don't have it.
You cleaned out.
Check my freezer, honey.
Yeah, because Southern food is amazing, and it is fried and wonderful. I worked on a show called Dinner in a Movie that shot in Atlanta before anything else was really shooting in Atlanta, and our craft services was so wonderful, but so incredibly unhealthy, but in the way that makes you sleepy. That's like the only reason that she would bring out just like deep fried this and buttered that. And, you know, it was like beautiful, like just buttery grits in the morning for breakfast. But you eat that, and the first thing you want to do is take a nap. So we to sort of like, we felt so gross in LA being like, but could we also just have like some raw almonds and, oh, I don't know, some celery? I remember I asked for some fresh veggies or something, and it was one of those like, and we preloaded them all with ranch. And I was like, but I will not be awake. I will not be well.
Can I tell you something? I wish that made me sleep. Nothing makes me sleep. If I found something like that made me sleep, I would eat it before bed.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun. Max Fun members, what's your favorite JV Club episode? Because I'm making a special JV Club episode that's all about you and what your favorite moments from the podcast are. Okay, so here's what you do. Record a 30-second to 1-minute voice memo telling us which JV Club episode or guest really stuck with you and why. And then just send it to producer Julian's email, which is julian@maximumfun.org. That's J-U-L-I-A-N @maximumfun.org with the subject line Max Fun JV Club. And yours might be one of the episodes that makes the curated special. In case you missed any of that, you can find all the information in the show notes for this episode. I'm so excited to hear from you and to put together a very special JV Club fan curated sort of variety show episode. So email Julian. I can't wait. Let's do this.
Bria, what's your reader wheelhouse?
A woman on a journey, space,
post-apocalyptic roads, and magical food. Mallory, what's your reader wheelhouse?
Werewolves, haunted houses, weird fiction, and books set in Florida for some reason.
We're Reading Glasses, and we want to know what your reader wheelhouse is.
We can use it to help you find more books that you love.
And avoid books that you don't. So whatever you like to read about and however you like to read it,
we want to help you read better.
Reading Glasses, every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Oh, man. So you have a spinning mind of, is it spinning of anxiety or is it spinning of ideas or is it neither and it's just...
It's sometimes it's both. Sometimes it's just I'm up every night at 2 or 2:30. I don't sleep. I have a lot of energy still.
Okay, so but it's not even something you wake up and go, oh God, no.
Yeah. Whenever I wake up, I'm like, ooh yeah, I'm like I have so much energy.
Well, that's great. I mean, aren't you? You just described yourself as one of those highly successful people. Like people always use Martha Stewart as an example of someone who's like, you know, I only need 4 hours of sleep. I don't know the rest of the time I bake. Like that's
I actually looked it up once, and it's like called a super sleeper. And I think she's one of the people who has it.
Super sleeper.
It's a super sleeper, and you don't require a lot of sleep.
Oh, I want that. We all want that. I feel like I got excited when I stopped feeling like I needed 8.5 hours of sleep and moved into the 7-hour realm where like that's where my body was naturally waking up. I felt like the world was my oyster. Like that extra hour and a half of being bright eyed and bushy tailed felt like, ooh, this is cool.
Yeah, but sometimes I wish I was like you guys who could sleep like on a weekend. I can't.
I don't know.
But you know what's so funny watching you and talking to you like this? It's so funny. You're so different from your character and I also wanted to tell you how much my family loves you on the show.
Oh, that's great to hear.
People think you're so funny.
Oh, that's great. I love doing that character. It was so much fun from day one of auditioning.
You were so gracious and great in the
audition and all that.
You were so funny when you walked in. I think you were the last or the hardest character we had. I think that's true.
You guys had, in fact, you had already started working and you were still looking like you shot out of order because you didn't have Summer
That's why you should feel so good because that character, for me, it's kind of easy to find a character, not easy, but to find a character that can play the one-dimensional character. But I really wanted someone who had more depth and who had something about her that was a little sympathetic in addition to how funny she was and why she was the way she was.
Yeah.
And you had that from the second you came in. Mm. So that was why it was like, oh yes. In the episodes too. You showed it, especially, I still love that episode with that bathroom scene with you and Eddie. Oh yeah. My God. So good.
That
you
was
were so amazing in that scene.
Oh geez.
And it's why people love that character because of that scene too. Really, it was so good.
Well, thank you so much. But that's also, I mean, that's all in the writing. I mean, not to just like turn it all back on you because how gross and everyone's, you know, disgusted and they're barfing up their food right now because we clearly love each other so much. But, you know, when you read the script, I feel like I remember seeing the direction, you know, which is not the first time I've seen this because I have played unpleasant or the sort of unlikable character from time to time because a lot of the time those are the funniest characters that are written.
Yeah, it's true.
Not in this case because everybody gets to say some real gems. But you know, there is the sort of like you do start to see that flag, which you immediately know. Oh, they've been seeing people, like it's possible that they've been seeing people and they've just been too unlikable. You know, you try. Sometimes it's because that's born out of the audition process and sometimes it's just because the writers very carefully from the start know, hey, look, I understand that as an actor, you may read this and think, oh, I get it. But please know that there's a lot going on in the layers underneath. You get a few pages to try to capture the essence of a character so someone auditions for it. And I do remember seeing, like, she's not a bitch, you know? Like, there was the sense of that. And that's, I mean, but it was all there. Like, it didn't even need to say that. It was so clear that this is a person who's an outsider to this, you know, club. And not only are they a club because they're a family, but they've bonded through this loss. And the very mm-hmm. person they've lost is the person that you're trying to come in and sort of like, haha, I know I'll never be her, but aren't I kind of the greatest next best thing? And like, yeah, that's a horrible exactly. position to be in, you know, whether
it
you're
is.
The
it's
best
tough.
Person or the worst person, that's an awful position to be in. So
it's
I really
so
felt,
true.
You know, from the beginning, like it was all there, you know.
But you were also did the comedy beautifully. I mean, people, the things people quote the most, like with you, is like with the way you did Leanne's fucking rhymes at the end of that. That Leanne freaking rhymes was such a funny runner for everybody. But when you did it at the end, it was so good.
It was a blast.
It was great.
Well,
so what have you watched it? What's the deal? Have you watched all 10?
I have not watched all 10. I've watched the first.
What?
I've watched the first three. I get real.
What are you so busy doing?
No,
so busy?
No, it's not that. Listen, I was on a show for 5 seasons and I've seen the first season of it and I've never watched the rest of it because I do get sort of like, ugh, I don't want
to,
like, I love watching other people, but I find that, like, you know, my neck gets tense because I don't have that thing where I just purely enjoy watching myself.
Oh, you need to watch,
of course I will.
I'm
absolutely going to watch all of it. Don't get me wrong for a New York Minute. I absolutely am going to, because everybody else is so freaking stellar. And I've loved watching them so far, but yeah, sometimes I get a little bit like, oh, I don't know.
It's so cute that you do that. I get that, but trust me, you're really good in it.
Man.
I edited it so many times, all these things, and I've seen you thousands of times, and you're good all the way through. Everybody's so good on the show. They're just so talented.
That's and did you have, when you're editing, this is a very inside baseball question, but, and I'll move back to you in a second, but I mean to your who
I would
you
actually
are
rather
youth.
Talk about
I'm sure
I'd rather
would.
Talk about the show.
I'm sure
I'm like
would.
You. I don't need to talk about myself.
Yeah. Sadly, I've made a podcast about who people are. But you know what? We've already killed 25 minutes, so you're golden. It's all downhill from here. It's all downhill.
Fabulous.
From here. When you are editing, you've been doing this for so long and so well. But do you still have those kind of like moments where you go, I don't know if I've stopped thinking this is funny because it's not funny, or if I've just watched this cut so many times that I've lost, or are you so methodical about it now that you sort of stay the course? Because like I did a show with a stand-up comedian who was show ran, and that wasn't, you know, it was his baby. He used to write on The Simpsons, but that was a very controlled like group environment. And for him, writing and having it be his own show, he's so funny and fast. He just lost faith in almost everything. Like the second it was printed and sent to the actress, he was like, I don't think that's funny enough. And like, I know mm-hmm. that's part of the process, but I think for the editing process for him was a nightmare, because then he really was just watching the same stuff over and over and starting to question like, oh, I'm not laughing anymore. I'm not laughing. Do you
well,
have
you always
that?
Question. You question, but mostly it's when they first come in to me. They first come in, and then I right away go, oh, because it's just timing is
everything
in comedy. It's everything. And you can edit something, just like change one little thing, and it's super funny. So you know that you have editing is like rewriting again. I mean,
yeah.
You're like rewriting it like for the 80th time when you're editing.
Yeah.
But as far as the whole show together, if it doesn't make me cry, if it doesn't get to me and I don't tear up, I know it's not right. And I go so by my gut, because this show is funny and sad, you know, there's some sadness to it.
Absolutely.
So I know that the comedy seems to come a little easier, you know, as far as the lines and timing and everything like that. But it's the heartfelt things. You can stand on that stage and perform a song and I won't cry at all. And I know something's wrong. And that's when we shoot it. Then I'll go in and I'll talk to the actors and I'll say what they need to do. And then we'll just keep doing it. And when it hits and I cry, I know I've got it. And once we have it, it usually is okay in editing because it's there.
I love that. And I will say those moments of, in particular with Shiloh, right? Because she has a very specific job responsibility on the show that none of the other actors have, and watching the two of you interact and watching, I'm like getting choked up thinking about it, watching what happens after she does a fantastic take of a really tough scene that's very emotional about something that Shiloh does not have necessarily direct experience in her short life, mm-hmm. and watching I don't know, just watching you come out and like having that little exchange. I mean, it's not like I'm standing there listening. It's, but you could see it all and just the way you look at her and the way she looks at you. And oh, it's the best.
That's so nice.
It's such a beautiful moment. Ugh.
She's such a talented young lady. I can't get over it. She's got so much going on and she's so deep. I mean, she's when I met her, she was 9 and she sang Jolene. Like for her audition. And I see it's like she's saying
her
it, like
voice
she's living.
Is
like she's
that
living.
Beautiful husky, like.
And yes, and she's gotten better and better. She, what I love is she works at it. She works
she
at
does.
Her guitar. She practices and she sings and she's so serious about it and she's so good. And they're all so good. All the kids are so good. But
they're amazing.
Right. She did have.
She just she had, yeah, she had a weight on
role.
Her. Yeah.
Yes. And she was so amazing.
Ugh.
She always made me cry every time I watch it. Every time I tear up.
It's
she's
insane.
So,
it's
so
insane. And that is
the that, cast. Yeah. The cast is amazing. I was so lucky.
Oh, they're so good.
I mean, they're all so good. The kids. The
and
kids
you don't I didn't
so
know.
Good.
You know, I came in and everyone was cast and you just kind of go, well, it's a cast with a lot of kids in it. Like, let's see. You know, let's see how
well,
this goes.
You know, here's what they all had in common, including you and including Eddie and Kat. Everyone was so kind.
Yeah.
They were so sweet.
Warm
everybody
as hell. Yeah.
Was a, you know, that means a lot to
considerate,
me.
Considerate, polite, with, like, ugh, yeah.
Same with writers, same with my writers and everything. And everybody I hired, I hope that they all have that going for them because it means everything. If you have people who are kind on top of all the talent, it makes for a beautiful experience for everybody. There's no, you know, egos and no competition and, you know, because that's in every job. You have so much of that. And I always try to stay away from that if you can, because it just makes for a much more fun and better experience for everybody.
I think that's great to hear for everybody who is a fan of television, which everyone kind of is. I mean, I'm sure there are people who are like, I only read books and I respect that. And that's great. But, you know, we're living in an era too, where there really is sort of something for everyone. But you know, you do sort of start, I think if you remove yourself, if you are removed from that world, there is sort of this concern that like the more success someone has, the more likely it is that they will become no longer grounded or no longer polite, or they'll lose touch with just like traditional, polite, like kind human values. And so, you know, there are people on that show that are from the writers, showrunners, writers, producers, to the actors and everybody in between, there's varying levels of success and notoriety. And, you know, I come from a family of famous people. Well, I'm from a small town and so and so, and this is my first real acting job. Well, I'm a writer's assistant who's da da da. Well, I ran the show. I mean, that really runs the gamut. And so I think it is really nice for people to hear that, you know, if you're a good person, none of that ends up mattering. Like, you're just a bunch of people who want to make a good thing together, and you're in a big family, and that's real. That's not a hokey thing that people go, oh, I'm so sure it's like summer camp. And it's like, no, it's like hard summer camp.
But it's hard work. But yeah. I don't love drama. I don't like the drama. I like people to get along. That's how I am in life. I like people to get along, and I like to be nice.
I want to go back to asking you about editing for a second too, because I also, I mean, that is such, like, how early in your life or career did you find out first person how important editing is? Like, did you have the sort of moment of being blown away like I did when I really went behind the scenes for the first time and went, oh, this is the real, this is the work. Like, and
it's,
of course, it's part of a phase. But for me, because I was less familiar with it, it really felt like I was like a lightning bolt. Like, oh my God, this is everything. This is everything.
It is. I mean, you hope and pray that you have all the footage you need. You know, you hope and pray. Like, you know, some directors give you more.
Right.
Some don't have that shot. You have to create. You have to create the scene to get what you want. You have to create it. I'm telling you, it's another writing session, but it's an intense writing session. And we have such good editors on the show. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Michael was so amazing. He was so good. Some people are just so good at it.
Oh, yeah. I always wish.
But you watch it constantly. If you have to watch every little thing, change it. It's amazing how you change it 1 second.
It's like surgery. Max. Surgical precision. That's a real thing when it comes to editing. True. You know?
It's true.
I wish that we had been able to do a wrap party, because those are some of my favorite moments in my life, are when you're at a function and someone you've never seen before comes up to you and looks at you with such familiarity, and they're like, Janet. And you're like, I don't know who you are. And they're like, oh, right. I'm the editor. You're my wife. I live with you. I've been seeing you 12 hours a day, every day for X amount of time. And I absolutely love that. I love all the post
That's
people
funny.
Who you never meet on set, and then they have so much to do with whether or not you come off like a complete schmuck or not.
It's,
like, they have everything to do with it.
They have all the power, but sitting next to me, they have to do what I say.
Yeah, get them, Karen.
Oh,
get
them. I try to make you all look wonderful, but you know, it wasn't that hard with you guys.
Oh man, when did you
You're
start writing? When did you go from working in production to kind of having more of a hand in what people were saying?
I was in game shows, as I told you, and then I went to another company and started creating game shows. We was coming up with game shows, and then I would write material for the game shows. And the material I would write would generally be funny. Like if we were doing a match, like a dating kind of thing, I would come up with really funny material. And I would write material, and someone said to me, you know, you should really write for like a sitcom. You're so funny. And I never really thought about it. And so then I wrote a couple of spec scripts, and that's how it started. I went, just because I was doing funny material on game shows, and I started writing. And that's what happened. I got on one show and then another, and how it works, you know.
How many women were on like sort of early writing teams that were you
What
on?
A good question, because my very first show, I was the only woman.
Right.
I mean, and it was not in game shows. In game shows, it was mixed, you know.
That's great. That's nice to hear.
But when I went from that to my first show, it was all guys. And back then, there was smoking allowed. There was everything was allowed.
Yeah.
Like, not like now.
Yeah.
But I remember being in a room. They were smoked. They would open the windows for the people who couldn't take it. And I was the only girl. And it was very hard, I have to say. It was tough. Because there was several of the more of their manly men. It was a show called, it was Uncle Buck. So you remember the movie Uncle Buck. This was a TV version.
Who was Uncle Buck in the TV version?
Kevin Meaney.
Okay. I don't remember seeing the TV show, but I absolutely remember it existing. And I definitely have a giant love of that movie through and through.
It was a great movie.
It's so good.
So I did that. Then it was there was a lot of kind of males. And so it was tough. And I remember thinking, any other show I ever do, if I ever do my own show, is going to be evenly mixed.
Yeah.
As mixed as possible with everything, because it's so important to have different voices, you know, in a show. It's just, people do think differently.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and it's nice to have a nice mix. You never want all of one thing and all men or all women. You want a mix.
Right. How did you navigate that in terms of, because that's definitely something that women across, you know, many, many different types of careers find and talk about. And obviously things are changing, and they're changing every day, and usually for the better. But I mean, I think, again, I look up to you, and I see characteristics that I recognize in myself. And again, because you are such a people person, and you are, you're not the kind of person, like, your authority does not come from, you know, I'm going to speak very loudly and over everyone else or anything like that. And so I'm wondering how you navigated that and sort of how you win over a room, or how you, because, you know, I'm not saying that the dudes are bad, but like, I was the first thing I wrote on. I was the only girl, and I loved the guys that I wrote with, but they just didn't. I don't interrupt people in that, like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I just didn't, I was so much more, I just didn't want to you know, when I was newer in the team and they all knew each other, and I just didn't want to impose, but yet I wanted my voice to be heard. And so I felt like I was just on a tight wire of, you know, am I going to seem like a jerk if I do this? Am I going to seem, you know, am I going to seem too girly if I sort of am too deferential? Like, where do I, what's the balance, you know?
It's hard. It's hard at the beginning. I mean, when you're just starting, it's hard. You do feel all those things. And you do feel, do I say too much? Did I say this? But I think I do that in life anyway. But I think over time, I think I always think you just do the work and you work so hard, which I do. I mean, I don't care what project I'm on, who I'm working for. If it's my show, it's someone else's show, I work exactly the same. I work really hard until I feel it's right. So I'm passionate about the work. So I think that comes before everything. Mm-hmm. And if you're passionate about the work and you work really hard, that's, rather than care about the ego stuff of it, though it's work, it takes work not to care about the ego stuff, you know? But yeah. I, like I said, I try to always be nice to everybody. And I think my sense of humor, I think I depend on that for a lot of things. So if something's uncomfortable, I'll make a joke.
Right.
I'll say, even as simple as, this is very uncomfortable. Uh-huh. You know, like, you just, if you talk it, and honesty yeah. is important. Honesty, and it comes, and also it comes with experience and age.
Right.
As you get older, as you do it a lot, you just get more comfortable with yourself and with yeah. it. And you just be honest and just make a joke if you can do that.
Yeah.
For me, I depend on my sense of humor to yeah. get me through a lot of things.
100%. 100%.
But and then just be nice is the best you can. I think it's important. I really say that a lot, because when I first started, and you work with people who have egos, they don't even want to take pitches, or they don't, because they want their pitch in. I think they're just hurting themselves. I never get why they do that, because the nicer you are in the room and the more collaborative everybody is, you get the best stuff from yeah. everybody when they're enjoying themselves and they're having a good time.
Yes.
For me,
yes,
that's yes, how I yes. feel.
Couldn't agree more. And it feels like such a no-brainer. And yet there are plenty yeah. of situations in which you go, a bit, do you not yeah. see it? Okay.
Yeah. Like, it takes work, though. It takes work. It yeah. takes a lot of work. It doesn't happen naturally. It takes work to get those things happening.
Yeah.
So they're nice and smooth and things like that.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
I'm Judge John Hodgman.
And I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne.
10 years ago, I came on Jordan Jesse Go and judged my first dispute. Is chili a soup? It's a stew, obviously.
The judge has dispensed a decade of justice. He's the one person wise enough to answer the really important questions. Like, should you hire a mime to perform at your own funeral?
After they cry, I want them to laugh.
Do you really need a tank full of jellyfish in your den?
They smell like living creatures decaying.
Only if they are decaying.
Yeah, which they will be.
Real people, real justice, real comedy.
Winner of the Webby Award for Best Comedy Podcast.
The Judge John Hodgman Podcast, every Wednesday on MaximumFun.org.
I don't want to, I mean, I really would have grilled you a lot more about your teenage years, and I've taken it very easy on you. I do play this game at the end yeah. that takes a little bit. It's sort of the idea is essentially, I think, leaves you with things that you enjoy sort of floating around in your brain. I find it to be a positive experience. It's also
hard.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we're going to make some smiles happen. And also possibly your stomach growl, because I do have a category that is about food. But this
okay,
is also,
I'm in.
Yeah, good. This is
don't
an opportunity.
Don't use big words.
Like Baba Ganoush? Is that?
Yeah. No, food is okay. I know all the foods. Okay, but don't use big words, so I'm embarrassed. I don't know what you mean. It'd be simple.
Give me three supercilious examples of, no.
See? Let me get my thesaurus ready. You're so smart.
This is also a way for us to get a little sense of some of the stuff that you like. And I've gotten a peek into it with some of the stuff that we've talked about. But basically, at the end of this, you know, it is kind of an eeny, meeny, miny, moe, I take care of all of that part. But it's like we're building this alternate universe life for alternate universe Karen, where anything is possible. And you'll see what I mean in a second. For example, I would love to get three writers or actors who aren't around anymore that in this alternate universe you're going to get to collaborate on something with. So, you know, whether you're writing on Mary Tyler Moore or, you know, you make a movie with Judy Garland or whatever, this is three things that would be amazing, you know, people that would be amazing to collaborate on something with.
Well, that would be the first one. I know I talked about her a lot in Judy Garland. I would love in my dream to sit down with Judy Garland and just talk and talk and talk. And I would like to sing with her because I do impressions of her. So I would like to sing with her. And the writers I admire as far as, you know, comedy, like are still here with us. Like Norman Lear is like one of my biggest idols. I mean, and he's still here with us, thankfully.
I'm going to throw him in there.
And he is just, you know, he's just brilliant. Brilliant. And like you mentioned Mary Tyler Moore, I mean, James Brooks. I mean, These are people I've admired for so long. It's the kind of writing I love. And I'll go back to the writing. It's like Mary Tyler Moore is one of my favorite shows. The way it was written, it was just beautifully written. You know, Roseanne, the beginnings of Roseanne, one of my favorite shows. I thought that was written beautifully and it started a new kind of writing and comedy, which I love so much.
Well, right now I've written down a collaboration with Judy, a collaboration with Norman, a collaboration with Mary Tyler Moore. Do those feel good?
Sure. I'm not so sure. Well, Mary Tyler Moore, the writers of Mary Tyler Moore. But
okay. What about, so give me somebody at the Judy and Norman level of enthusiasm of somebody that you would love to have made something with or make something with.
That's a really good question. Neil Simon.
Great.
Neil Simon's I love everything he's written.
Great. Okay, next category, let's do three singers or musicians, and I do not care if you want to throw Judy back in here for this, but we're creating this situation in which you have this fantastic lifelong friendship with these people, living or dead, don't care, that, you know, it's like, oh, they're going to be at the bowl. Hopefully you'll come and sit backstage or be in the dressing room and like, you know, what would you like my set list to be, best friend Karen? So these are like three people that you who you love as singers, musicians of a kind, composers, that we're going to give you this kind of like very close relationship with. And hopefully they're not jerks, or in this reality, we're making sure they're not jerks.
Okay. Well, Barbra Streisand will be the topper.
Got to put Babs in there.
Frank Sinatra. Would be my dream to love sit it. With, to get to know, to have a drink with, to be in the Rat Pack. Oh, yeah. I would love to be in his little Rat Pack. That would be amazing. Let's see, Gershwin, George Gershwin. Great. I love the George Gershwin music. I would sit and just pick his brain and try to write something with him.
Great. Okay. Next category, three foods that in our reality, we've spoken about some of them, maybe it's not great to eat like just incredible amounts of for whatever reason. In this alternate reality, nothing like that is a problem. So you can have whatever this thing is in perpetuity at the snap of your fingers and there's zero ramifications to anyone, including you.
Well, I guess my first thing would be donuts. I love donuts. Great. Every kind of donut.
Great.
Except coconut. And I don't think I could live my life without peanut butter.
Oh yeah.
And I know I put it on everything, even on like the desk. It's just, I'll eat it off of anything.
Would you eat it off of a dog's paw?
Okay. No, I was wrong. Thank you for clearing that up. I am exaggerating. I love it so much. Yeah. I love peanut butter. Do you want to know creamy? Do you want to know creamy or do you want to know chunky? Creamy.
Okay, yeah.
I love creamy.
Chunky is a different undertaking. That's like a different...
It's serious. It's like a meal.
Yeah.
Creamy is a side.
I agree.
I also, another side would be cream cheese. I can't live my life without cream cheese. And of course, I love pizza. Yeah.
Well, I put donuts, peanut butter, and cream cheese. You've run out of categories. So if you want to put pizza on there.
I could go on. This one, if you're limiting me to three.
The unprecedented 10 food categories.
Yeah, I'll go on all day.
When I came down to LA to stay for a pilot season, when I was sort of dragged down from San Francisco, I stayed with a couple of friends of mine, and they made toast with cream cheese for breakfast in the morning. And it was a like, I'd only ever thought of bagels and cream cheese as going together, which I ate plenty of as well. But somehow just like some toast with a thin layer of cream cheese.
Okay, stop there. Not thin
miraculous.
Layer.
Miraculous. Okay,
you need a thick layer.
But it
and
sinks
also,
in also to toast tried, in a lovely way.
Have you tried sourdough toast with cream cheese?
Oh, get out
That's
of town.
That's the ticket. Right there. That's the
oh,
ticket.
That's
sourdough
what I want
toast.
Right now. Yes.
Thick cream cheese.
Oh.
Don't be afraid to go thick.
No, you're right. You're right. It's going to get sucked
like,
in.
Like I don't want... when you bite it, you want your teeth marks in it.
Right. You want forensics to be able to identify yes. you as the murderer of the cream cheese.
Exactly. That's because how your you teeth know marks it's right. It.
Understood. Understood. Okay, beautiful. All right, next category. This is... alternate universe romances. So it could be a character from something. It could be an actor from, you know, it could be Paul Newman circa, you know, Butch Cassidy, you know, anything like that.
That's
real
a good one.
Three that we're going to give you this sort of alternate universe beautiful
well,
romance.
Well, I'm just going from like movies or whatever. I guess the people I've always found so attractive. Antonio Banderas, I think.
Come
he
on.
Is just
come on.
Beautiful.
Are you kidding me?
I mean, beautiful. Young Al Pacino. I yep, mean, come yep. on.
Yep.
Now, oddly, I love Albert Brooks.
Oh, I do too. Are you kidding me?
So I find him just, you know, those young movies when he was like, I mean, he was so adorable. That's like he's bear-like. I love bear-like.
Oh,
guys.
No. Defending Your Life, one of the best movies of all time.
He was so good in that.
Yeah.
And that's such a great movie. And yes, I loved him. Even Broadcast News.
I know.
Everybody probably liked, what was it, William Hurt? Is that who was in it? Who was the...
But, you know, what a himbo.
But I liked...
No, you gotta love
Albert Brooks.
And his nervous sweating. You know what movie no one ever talks about that I love so much is Starting Over. Like, no one from my era... Like,
love
no one I know my age or younger has ever seen it. They don't know anything about it. And it is one of my favorite movies. And James L. Brooks. I mean, it's so... It feels
so
very you to me. It feels very like it's extraordinarily funny. It's scathingly funny, but it's deeply emotional. And
yeah,
everybody is so... Like, that Candace Bergen role, like, that's what I, you know... If I could go
like.
Be her, yeah.
That's what you were like when you did your singing.
I mean, she's what a mess.
I know, that was
And her
funny.
Terrible singing voice. I mean, it's just wonderful. If you have not seen Starting Over, people listening to this, please feel free to. And then you will know
it's
what I mean when I go.
It's a brilliant
Better
movie.
Than ever. I'm gonna be better than ever. It's so great.
But you did that on the show. Did you channel
that? That's the gift
that
you gave
you...
to me. Oh,
but
I
you
absolutely
did it so
thought
funny.
About
you
Candace.
Did it just like that.
Oh,
it was
I
so
absolutely
funny.
Thought about her. Ugh.
You all listening must watch Janet in that episode. She was so funny when she tried to sing.
What a pleasure.
On Country Comfort. She
I have
amazing.
Gotten, I just answered a couple of tweets from people who know me from other things who were like, I was so crushed that you didn't get to use your beautiful voice when you were acting as Summer. And I was like, I know, but like, you're missing the point.
No, but actually,
so I'm not that great of a singer.
My niece said to me, my niece heard you. She said, she's a really good singer, isn't she? I said, she is, but she had to fake it. She goes, you can tell she's a great singer who had to try to be bad.
Let me tell you how easy it is to be bad when you're singing anywhere near Catherine McPhee. When you're near Catherine McPhee, your voice is garbage if you're not her. So
it's
totally
so
fine. It's totally
can you believe
fine.
How good her voice is?
It's unreal.
Everything she sings. And she's got that thing in her voice. Remember I said about Judy Garland? She's got that She's got that crying in her voice that when she sings a ballad, you just, your heart breaks.
Oh, yeah.
She's got that thing.
Oh, yeah. She's got the thing.
So
she's
good.
Got the thing.
When she came in and she had to record, I used to tell her that's not right, just so I can keep hearing her over and over again. Because it was like getting a concert. A free concert. I go, that's good, Catherine, but I think you can do it better. And I would just sit there in my headphones and I'm like, oh, she's so good.
Yeah, that's the most self-indulgent thing I've ever heard you say, and that's
it
not
is.
Saying much. Okay, I got Antonio, I got young Al Pacino, I got Albert Brooks. I think we have, first of all of their names start with A. I don't know what that means.
Interesting.
But they do
Ooh,
all start with A. What if you're just going down your phone book of crushes and you're like,
but it's
I didn't
funny
even
too.
Get to. Yeah.
By the way, Frank Sinatra would be on that list too because I love him and everybody. way. I'm so, I love him.
I'm like uncomfortably fascinated and obsessed with the Rosemary's Baby era Mia and Frank saga. Like, to me, that feels like I want to see the movie about that era when she was also making that movie. That's just like, that's Holly, and I know it's all in New York, but that is Hollywood, like Hollywood royalty, fascinating.
That's funny.
Era.
I like the Rat Pack when he's drinking, they're all drinking and it's having fun. I like that.
I feel like they knew that they were. They knew that they were living inside of a legend while it was happening, which isn't always the case. Like, but I feel like they knew, right? They kind of
really?
Knew. They're like, they're going to be talking about this for 50 more years. They're going to be talking about these conversations we had. Like, I think they knew. And
that's
what, funny. But not in a bad way. Like, but
no,
I don't know.
They knew.
It was so iconic. Do you know what I mean? It was so iconic. Okay, yeah. Next category, let's do three skills that you would love to wake up with tomorrow and these sort of downloaded Matrix style. It's like, didn't have to practice, woke up and we're like, oh, I guess I could take apart a computer and put it back together or whatever. Three skills.
Well,
like that.
For sure singing. Like, if I could sing like Catherine, wake up singing and sound like Catherine, I would be the happiest person in the world.
Great.
Playing piano. I wish I could play jazz piano.
Nice.
Like, you know, like when they do the real wild things and all that. I mean,
and somehow it all makes sense.
Don't understand why when I was a child I took accordion lessons because don't know why my parents felt that that was the instrument that I should learn.
Oh, I love that so much.
And it taught me chords and it taught me how to read music, but come on, that's not the sexiest instrument when you're playing, and you know, and also the bellows, like I was always scared it would affect my breasts. Can I say
that?
Oh,
sure.
I was afraid.
Oh, I never thought
about
that.
I didn't know if I was going to get like accordion things in them, you know, like if they were going to look like that. But I remember when I was like 12, I said to my dad, please, I don't want to play this anymore. And I do wish they would have helped sent me to the piano as opposed to the accordion, but I did learn things on that. Mostly it's musical. I mean, also chef, I would love to be a phenomenal chef. Like to have the talent to do that. It's all with food or music related.
That's great.
Everything.
These are the beautiful things in life. I give my stamp of approval. Next category, three places in the world, whether you've been there or not, three places in the world that we give you a vacation home that you can just sort of teleport to, so you don't even have to like travel if you don't want.
Well, one would definitely be in the snow. So it would be a log cabin in some very snowy place. Now, whether it's local or whether it's in Switzerland, just the whole log cabin, fireplace, snow all around me.
Great.
Snow is my favorite thing in the world.
I feel similarly.
Another place would be like Sicily, like having on the wine country and having all go pick grapes and make wine and have one of those beautiful chateaus out there looking at the whole vineyard.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
It would be amazing. And probably I would love a beautiful penthouse in New York.
Great.
I would like to just be up there and looking at all the beautiful scenery in New York and the skyline. And I love New York.
Gorgeous.
So probably those three.
Let's do three eras that you can see, you can visit. Speaking of safety bubbles, you can go back for a night and see Judy at Carnegie Hall, like those sorts of moments where they are in the past, you're in a safety bubble, nothing can happen. So if you want to see the dinosaurs, you're also welcome to do that. Three things that you get to sort of witness personally.
Well, I think it would be the 40s. Great. Because I love everything about the 40s. And a lot of stories that my parents told me, like that's where they met, you know, they met at these little dances they had and everything seemed so much more wholesome. And I like that. So I like that era where you go in and dance and it was fun. And even after the war, you just see all those things after the war and how happy everybody was. And that time of when they're creating things, like there's this show that I love about on the History Channel. It's like food, it's something with America. I can't even remember the name right now, but you learn how like cookies started. You learn how chocolate started, you know, potato chips.
Oh, I need to watch this. I would love
this. Oh, my God, it's the best food that built America, I think.
Oh, okay.
Is what
I'm
it
writing
is.
That down.
It's so good. But in that time when everything was starting, that is an exciting time.
Yeah.
You know, just all that stuff starting. The 60s were fun, but, you know, I also not, you know, I don't know. I like Old music too. I like the 40s music now, but real super history, I guess it would be fun, you know, to go way, way, way back. But really, I just like the time of the 40s because I love the music and I love the 50s.
Yeah.
I like the feel of that and I like the music.
Okay.
I love the music.
Okay. So I have now one of three 40s, but like maybe we could put you in three different places in the 40s. Like you're at a dance or you're at, I don't know why I'm being so specific about this game. Like, I'm
do you want
so
me to pick like different eras? I don't know. I like, I guess I could just like try to think back in history, but I can't think of any.
No, I like the idea of you going to the 40s, but I was just wondering if there was like, you know.
Well, I'd be singing in a saloon.
This is what we're talking about.
Yes, I'd be at the piano.
Yeah.
And I'd be singing and I would be playing amazing, but also I'd be sitting there and there'd be a pianist. And I would be singing and everybody would be loving it.
Great.
It would be amazing.
I guess
being in a bar.
This is what's happened. I've just decided that is all three categories. So you've already got that and it's happening. And now I just have to figure out the rest that goes around this. What would you describe your mood? Now, it could be the 2 a.m. wake up. It could be a later wake up if you did, in fact, go back to sleep after that. But what was your mood when you woke up this morning?
That's a good one. It was pretty even. Usually I'm either uh-oh.
Yeah.
Or I'm like, oh, I'm in such a good mood today.
Yeah.
But today was pretty even. And I knew I had business. I knew I had to get ready for you. And I had to have
that's
my
supposed
time
to be pleasure.
No, that was a nightmare.
Okay.
And no, I had, and then I got on the bike. I always get on the bike every morning and I ride on my exercise. So that's good. I do that. And, but it was pretty okay today.
Okay.
It wasn't horrible. It wasn't excited or super happy or super sad.
Okay. Well, that's all I needed so that I could get the,
boring.
The number.
Do you think I'm so boring? I feel so
I think
boring.
You are extremely uninteresting.
Thank
no,
you.
That is
But I'm
bullshit.
Gorgeous, right?
But
I'm gorgeous.
It's
give
for,
me it,
but I'm here for your looks.
You know what's nice?
You're not a plain
not,
woman.
Since this is not like going to be video, you can tell everybody I'm stunning and they won't
yeah.
know.
So
tell
also,
them.
I mean,
tell
you're
them.
Horrible. Come on. Oh my God. Listen, you're familiar with perfection, everyone, right? Well, that's Karen.
That's nice. But
look, we both look very cute. We've got our glasses on. You
and
have
sincere.
Your hair is redder than mine is. I wanted
it's
my
red.
Hair to be more red.
I can make my
pink.
Hair redder. Watch. Look. I can put a light on it. Are you trying to do something as we talk? Because you're not looking at me anymore.
I had to buy time. I was like tapped. I was doing some tap dancing, which obviously.
By the way, you were really subtle.
Very transparent. Very.
You were so subtle. You
I was like,
do you
uh-huh.
look at me?
Yeah, whatever you just said, I agree.
What are you
okay.
busy doing? What
I had so to come up doing? With the results of your mash.
Oh, you mean so there's a thing you come up with at the
yeah,
end?
Yeah, now it's like, guess what? This is your alternate universe MASH life. It's happening.
Oh.
You can enjoy it. I want you to know that you have this MASH game stands for Mansion, Apartment, Chakra, House. This is just like a game that people still play as young people. I would say usually young women like in junior high.
So I don't know.
Therefore,
it.
I do it.
Yeah,
and
you're
so
baby.
Mansion, Apartment, Chakra, House. I want you to know you got a mansion which falls right in line with your sprawling, fabulous penthouse in New York City. Beautiful penthouse in New York. You also have a fabulous collaboration. Again, this feels all, it's kind of a piece so far. You have a fabulous collaboration with Gershwin.
Oh.
Which makes sense because you are a virtuoso pianist. So any genre, I mean, listen, you're kind of shaming George at this point with how fabulous and talented you are. And since, of course, you know, you've also had this kind of magical career singing and playing piano in sort of a saloon or a pub in the 40s, you really got the authenticity of all of that. Makes sense why you and Judy Garland are so tight. I mean, you get her. You were there for her in that era of her life as she was growing into an older age where things got tough. You were right there, still making
there.
Wonderful music together. So this Judy George, New York mansion penthouse access to the 40s, amazing playing of piano. The last two things, I think, are the sexiest of a lot of very sexy things that are happening in this alternate universe for you, Karen Lucas. But the idea of Antonio Banderas getting out of a hot shower and then having cream cheese just sort of slathered all over his warm, perfect skin. That is what awaits you in the boudoir after these days and nights of sheer pleasure and your concert. And I mean, that's a sec. This is a sexy, sophisticated outcome.
That is a nice ending. I mean, right? I finish the night, I go home to Antonio with cream cheese.
Yes.
Love it.
And that, my friend, is the end of the podcast. Please, everyone, if you have not checked out Country Comfort on Netflix, I do so hope you will. I don't know how algorithms on that in that network work, but I do know that I hope we get to make more and that you would be supporting one of the nicest, funniest people I have met in show business. So, and that is you, Kara Lucas.
Oh, thank you for clearing that up.
And that is definitely the first grip. He was...
Listen, this
never
was
forget
fun.
A face.
This was fun. You are amazing. You are amazingly you. Talented. You are beautiful. People have seen you, so they know how beautiful you are. You are so talented. Thank you so much for doing Country Comfort because you made it so special.
Oh,
and I hope you all watch it. I really do because I think it'll make you feel good. That's our
it
goal.
Absolutely will.
Make
it
you
absolutely
laugh,
will.
Make you cry.
And I've done a lot of things that I can't tell anyone in my family to watch. And I can, I've been able to tell them to watch that, this show, because it is as funny or funnier than a lot of like the subversive alt comedy stuff I've done.
Right.
But you actually get like a lot out of it that's on the heart side of things too, which is very important to me. So
that was the goal. So I'm glad, and thank you for being such a wonderful part of it.
No, thank you. Listen, we're gonna fight this out, but away from the public eye. So everybody, thanks for listening. I will talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.